haven't mentioned this to you yet, but that whole waking up at 2 a.m. like I'm plugged into an electrical socket is happening again.
No, fuck off. What?
Yeah, I was panicked and I'm like, oh my God, it's back. What do? I need sleep. And then I remembered that based on my nurse practitioner's advice, I started taking a higher dose of estrogen patch about 6 weeks ago. So I've got an appointment booked to see her because I think, you know, I've got a lot of stress going on, but I think maybe that increased dose has triggered that estrogen dance again.
Oh, interesting. And I don't even think I would have clued into that. Good on you.
Yeah, might not be, but I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, you may as well. Well, and like, let me know what she says because my anxiety is, I like even sitting here right now, like the anxiety coursing through my veins is insane. And I think a lot of, for me, it's because Finn just started university and he's off and he's on his own. And, you know, I don't know if he's going to make any friends and I don't know if he's going to have any fun. And I don't know, like, what if he
plays? Yes, he is. Yes, he is. But I totally get where you're coming from.
I hope so. It's just like, it's terrifying. I don't know. Anyway, I know it's going to be good, but, I don't know, maybe hearing you say that though, I'm postmenopause now and it never even dawned on me. And I know that I do also, this is stressful, but maybe there is something there. Maybe I need to start tracking my symptoms and go in and talk to
you. See whether you need a new prescription.
Yeah. I never even thought about that. You're right. It's tricky. Like, is this hormones? Is this stress? Is this depression?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, whatever is causing how you're feeling, the point is it impacts everything. And I don't know about you, but some days I'm struggling to keep it together.
Some days I struggle every day. I feel like lately it's like, I don't know. It's not as bad as when we started this as perimenopause. Do you remember? I almost like threw in the towel right at the beginning.
That was terrifying.
Yeah. My depression. And it was so dark. It was scary. I'd never felt like that before. And looking back now, I wonder like how much of that was hormones, how much of that was COVID. Maybe it was just my life. I don't know, but it was really confusing. It was really isolating and overwhelming. And it was really hard to figure out what was going on. How do you even start?
Well, that's why I'm so glad we're talking to Dr. Ariel Delfin today. Psychiatrist, co-founder of a virtual clinic called BRIA, where they actually understand the complex intersection of mental health and reproductive life stages and all that that can bring up for women.
Intersection or Bermuda Triangle, Mick?
Well, let's ask Dr. Ariel. Ladies, this is perimenopause.
Dr. Ariel, welcome. So great to see you again.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Great to be here.
Please excuse the very sexy voice. I am a little under the weather, but I did not want to miss this conversation. So everyone's just going to have to listen to the
sexiness. No, today. I like the sexiness.
Well, thanks.
Thanks.
Let's dive in, Dr. Ariel. So you are the CEO and co-founder of BRIA, which is a virtual clinic offering mental health, comprehensive mental health options and hormone assessments. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about how that came to be and how your background helped to create what sounds like an amazing offering.
Well, thanks. I'm always happy to talk to about BRIA, and I'm very happy to be here talking with you both today. So thank you for this opportunity.
Of course.
I have been a psychiatrist caring for women with mental health concerns for over 20 years. And me and one of my co-founders worked side by side at a big academic hospital in downtown Toronto. Her name's Dr. Bev Young. And we had offices beside each other. We worked running the women's mental health program at this big hospital, one after the other. And we always had a dream of creating a one-stop shop where women could come at different life stages and get all the healthcare services that they need. And so this dream started many, many years ago. And then we, right before and during COVID, we turned 50. We had been doing virtual care around the whole province of Ontario starting in about 2014. And so everything came together at some point in early COVID. And we said, it's now or never. Let's jump. Let's create our dream. And that's how Bria was born.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. It was a time of obviously great stress, great distress, a lot of pain and suffering for many people, but also a time for us to say, okay, this is our one life. This is our one career. Let's dream big and let's jump and make this happen.
Oh my God, I love this. So tell us a little bit about Bria and the services that you're providing.
So we provide services for women and their partners and families across reproductive life stages. We see people going through the fertility process, in pregnancy, postpartum, early parenthood, and then, of course, in the menopause transition and menopause. And what we offer are a range of services, from different types of therapies, talk therapies, to hormone assessments, hormone treatments, more in-depth mental health treatments and assessments, including ADHD assessments, including assessments for hormone therapy, including support for people who have sleep issues and insomnia. Like, who doesn't at all these different stages, right?
No kidding.
And dietitian, nutritional help. So really everything that someone needs to feel better, to get better, at these different stages, we brought them together under the Bria umbrella to get the kind of help they need.
This is awesome. That's, I need this.
Amazing.
Thank you. Sign up.
Yeah. I need to move back to Ontario.
We're open in Alberta too. We're open all over Ontario and over all over Alberta.
Oh, amazing.
Oh, perfect. Oh, that's fantastic.
So maybe you could take us through what someone who is like us, perimenopausal, can expect when they sign up for your offering. How does it work?
So they can go to our website, which is www.betterbria.com. And on it, they will see a little button where it says, or several buttons on it to say book a call. So they can book a call. And they will be greeted by one of our amazing care coordinators. Well, they will learn about Bria services. They will learn about what we have that can help people in perimenopause. And I'll get into that in a second. So they book a call. And then generally, the best way for people to start is to sign up after that for what we call our mini health assessment. So that's a 30-minute intake assessment that will go through their health history, their physical health, their mental health, their hormone health. And then the care coordinator who does that service too will develop a plan for them. So very commonly for people in perimenopause, that might entail a hormone assessment, which we call our MediHealth assessment. Then they'll meet with one of our providers. They'll do a very comprehensive preventative physical health, mental health, and hormone health assessment. And the outcome from that may be a prescription for hormone therapy, menopause hormone therapy, or non-hormonal therapies that can help with symptoms they're having, like hot flashes or night sweats, or something really suitable to help with the symptoms that they may be dealing with in perimenopause. So that would be for people who are really struggling with physical symptoms of perimenopause.
And sorry, what kind of practitioner are they seeing? Is it an MD that they're a registered nurse?
They're not seeing an MD for that. They're seeing a nurse practitioner who's trained in women's health. If someone also has mental health concerns in perimenopause, they may start with one of our mental health assessments, which is done by a non-MD first, an OT, a registered psychotherapist, a social worker for the first part, and then they'll see an MD psychiatrist for the second part. And where they start in perimenopause really is determined by the symptoms they're dealing with. What's the most concerning thing? Is it physical health that's more bothersome? Is it mental health that's more bothersome? And then they'll be suggested to one direction or the other. And then after that, they can do the other service as well, if need be.
Can I ask you, like, is it more mental or physical? Or is it like 50-50? Like, when the women come to you, is there a greater proportion of the population coming for mental health or physical, or?
Well, I'd say it's both. It's a lot of both. And people often don't know. They come in and they're like, I'm feeling like crap. Help me. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why it's going on. That's why our intake assessment is so helpful, mm-hmm. because we don't expect people to come to us with a diagnosis. Yes, this is physical symptoms. Yes, this is mental health. That's where we do the work. That's where we want people to rely on our expertise and our knowledge. So that's why we have this very wide open door of our mini health assessment. We say to people, come try this and we will tell you what we think you need to start with.
Are women sometimes, like, do you find that a number of women come in and they just think, I just don't feel great. I just don't feel like myself. I'm whatever it is. And then you say, oh, okay. You do your assessment. And then you're like, oh, this is perimenopause. Are they gobsmacked? Do they know that this is coming? Is that why they think they're there? Or are they surprised by that diagnosis? I guess it depends on the age, but.
I'd say it depends on the age and it really depends on the person. You know, I feel like people are getting more and more well-educated about perimenopause. They're more and more aware of the fact that menopause hormone therapy can be suitable for people. They're more and more aware that if they can't take hormone therapy, there are other options. So I'm finding, we've been in business for almost 3 years, that I'm finding more and more people coming and they have a sense of what's going on and what they're looking for as time progresses. And as people like you guys and so many other people out there are doing really good work educating people, they're coming with more knowledge. But we don't want people to have to bear the burden and come to us and saying, you know, I think this is my diagnosis. I think this is what they need. Like, we want people to come to us and rely on our knowledge that we can help them regardless. So we want to take where they can come and they can be like, oh, finally a place where I'm understood. Is this mental health? Is this long COVID? Is this, am I drinking too much? Do I have perimenopause? Am I depressed? Like, we pull at all those strands and we say, yes, maybe you're anxious. Maybe you're, you know, going through perimenopause. So we want to do that work for everybody.
And what you're speaking to is, you know, most people would probably tick most of those boxes. And that's exactly the point, is that there is no one solution here. There are a lot of, you know, factors that come together at this pivotal time in a woman's life, right? And it's
exactly
not just the symptoms. It's
exactly
the crush of midlife, as we like to call it. And how amazing is it to have a team of experts who get that and can help someone not just parse out what is going on, but figure out the best way forward.
You know, I really like the term, the crash of midlife that you're using, because I don't want to reduce everything to our hormones and medications and pills. Like, as we've talked about, as you know, both of you know, like, there is so much else going on too. It's relationships, it's our parents, it's our kids, it's our, you know, our work, our, the world we're living in these days. Like, we're crushed on all these different sides. So that's why we also offer all kinds of therapies for people to be able to parse out, how do I deal with this? Okay, maybe I am on medication or I'm on menopause hormone therapy, but I also need to figure out, like, do I still like my partner? We're left alone. Is my kid leaving home? That really hurts. Or, oh, they're not leaving home and I wish they were leaving home. It's like, we need to figure all this out, right? And that takes more than just a medication. So we come at mental health, physical health very comprehensively.
Amazing. Question for you on the mental health piece. And maybe this is, you can't generalize, but I wonder if you see a reluctance in some patients or the majority of your patients to actually start peeling back the onion on, you know, should I be married or should I, you know, that's a pretty scary place to go, I would think, mm-hmm. for most people. And I'm just wondering what you see in your practice.
Oh, we see that all the time. Mm. And we see, that's why we're in it for the long relationship that especially that our therapists have with people, because on day one, nobody's making a recommendation. Oh, you should leave your marriage. Like, that would freak people out. And we would, you know, people would run for the hills. These are things, like you said, we have to very gently approach and build up a relationship and build up trust and get to know who is coming to see us.
Like, absolutely.
You know, we take our jobs with great humility and say, we don't know what's best for you, especially not on day one. And let's sort of, let's poke around and see what's leading you to feel really super anxious. What's leading you to feel really down? What's leading you to drink too much? Why are you like, you know,
angry all the time?
What's going on there? So we want to poke around at all the different parts of people's lives together with someone else and say, this could be something that you're not aware of, you're not dealing with, you don't want to talk about.
Right.
Let's slowly start to peel back the layers and talk.
If I come to you and I'm seeing a therapist and a dietitian and I'm now on HRT, like, are you guys coming together to...
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And is that like a regular ongoing?
Absolutely. That's one of the beauties of our model, is that we all work together. And in particular, we have amazing, well-trained therapists. We have regular meetings, and we'll put our heads together and say, okay, what's going on here? And we'll bring sort of the collective hive mind to say, okay, have you considered this? Have you considered that?
Wow.
And that's one of the beauties of our model and working on our team, is that we have people with so much different types of training and different expertise. What I did want to say is, one of the things we're super excited about at Bria is we are now doing training for healthcare providers to become menopause mental health certified. So we've developed our own program, our own training and accreditation for healthcare providers of all kinds. They can learn about being a mental health provider for people in midlife and going through menopause. And we're so excited about this. We've trained over 100, and I think we're now at 120 clinicians over the past 12 months.
Wow.
This is super exciting. So we've trained all our own providers. They've attended our training. Plus, we're training people from all over the world to get our certification to learn how to offer better care for people at midlife. So that's something we're super excited at Bria of doing now too.
And if someone is listening and is interested, do they come to find you through your website?
They can come to our website. They can email us at hello@betterbria.com for more information.
And is the crux of this certification, like, is it recognizing the menopause symptoms, or is it, are they dealing with clients in perimenopause and menopause differently than they would a teenager who's going through, you know, puberty? Or
100%. So we it's a 4-week training program, and we teach people about the physical symptoms of perimenopause. We teach them a little bit about menopause hormone therapy. We teach them about the mental health changes and challenges and interpersonal changes and relationships in perimenopause. We teach them some specific therapeutic tools. We also teach them about sleep issues, nutrition issues at this stage, about sex therapy, sexual health and relationship changes. And then we review cases, so to get people to put all these things together. So it's essentially to give people the knowledge and information to help them support their own clients and their own practices to be able to say, yeah, that sounds like perimenopause. Those recurrent UTIs you're having that the doctor's saying, you know, couldn't definitely not be related to perimenopause. They probably are. And that's causing you a lot of pain and discomfort and taking multiple courses of antibiotics. Like, have you thought about doing this?
So scheduling more sex is not going to work.
Exactly. 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 So it's helping all these providers have a wider lens and the right tools to support the people who they're seeing in their own practices. So we're trying to make a real ripple effect for women at midlife to get good care and informed care.
Wow, this is so cool. I didn't even know you were doing this. I love this.
Thank you.
One thing, Dr. Errol, that struck me on your website, and I think this is also really important, as you know, menopause is now a movement. It's beyond a moment, and this is an amazing thing. But there can also be the downside, which is someone will then blame everything that's happening in their life to perimenopause or menopause, depending on what age and stage they're at. And that's problematic, can be dangerous, in fact, in some instances. So I read on your site that you help patients distinguish menopause-related symptoms from other conditions. I was wondering if you could give us an example of, you know, it seems like perimenopause or menopause, but it's actually, you know, and how you parse out what it actually is.
Great question. So let's say, since I'm a psychiatrist and a big focus of what we do is mental health, you know, if we look at depression and anxiety, those are very common things, or feelings of rage that someone is having. So hands up for everybody on that, right? So that's where our intake assessment is so helpful, to be able to say, yes, you are, you know, based on your age, based on your menstrual cycle patterns, you are in perimenopause. But let's look a little bit deeper and saying, okay, you know, you've just lost your job because they want to hire someone a lot younger than you. And, you know, your kids are really struggling in university. And, you know, you meet all the criteria for depression. You have a really untreated depression. Depression can often manifest as anger or sadness or rage. So let's try and treat your depression and see if that reduces some of the symptoms that you're having. And the same with things like if someone has really bad premenstrual dysphoric disorder, that can get worse in perimenopause, but maybe someone doesn't know that they're hormonally sensitive and that their moods and their anger and their irritability fluctuate along their cycles. And, you know, it's not just about being in perimenopause, but let's look closely at your background. Oh, you've had postpartum depression and anxiety. Oh, throughout your life, like maybe since your 20s, you've noticed that you've had this pattern in the month, in the weeks leading up to getting your period, where you have a lot more irritability and you're supercharged, angry. Okay, well, maybe we need to treat this like premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which can get worse in perimenopause. So we don't want to just say, okay, take HRT or MHT or something like that. Like, let's treat what is happening. And you are someone with hormone sensitivity, that your brain, under the influence of wildly fluctuating estrogen, progesterone, that's kicking off the serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine, that's responsible for your mood, for your anxiety, for your anger. Let's look, take another approach. And maybe you have PMDD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder. Let's get a hold of that first and foremost. And that will probably get you a long way towards feeling better, perimenopause or not.
So then, so if I come to you and it, and we want to treat the depression first and see if that's, if we can get to the heart of that, what kind of treatments are we doing? What does that look like?
So the gold standards for treating depression most effectively are often therapy, talk therapy, especially if someone has mild or moderate depression. Talk therapy has the most data and is the place to start. If it's in the more moderate to severe category, we'll often add in medication, an antidepressant medication. And often the combination is what is best. And there's a lot of women on social media saying, I went to my doctor and they just gave me an antidepressant, blew me off. I feel like we've gotten... Sometimes that is necessary. It's not enough for many people, but sometimes that is necessary. And there are safe and effective medications that people can and should take to really treat the symptoms they are experiencing. And so it's important to start with that.
Right.
It's funny because that was my experience. I went to my doctor in my mid-40s and was like, hey, I've got this, 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 and this. And he's like, okay, well, we can put you on an antidepressant. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
No, like I didn't, my goodness, I've got perimenopause brain today. I can't think of words, but I didn't see myself as someone that needed that type of treatment. I was like, whoa. And I didn't even have the word perimenopause at the time. Right. So it was really kind of strange. Anyway, maybe he was better than I thought.
Well, maybe not. Like, maybe he just didn't know. And I don't know how long ago that was for you, but
a while.
Many healthcare providers, when they see someone in midlife, they're like, oh, they're not feeling like themselves. Let's treat them like they're depressed. They didn't have the language. They often still don't have the language to say, this person is in perimenopause. This sounds like perimenopause. Or to dig deep and take a proper history to try and find out, is this perimenopause? Is this depression? Like, there are ways that we take a history, and as mental health care providers, as a psychiatrist, we can distinguish that. And that's why going to a healthcare provider who's informed and trained is so, so important. So you don't just go down the wrong road and get inappropriately treated for the wrong thing.
And well, and fairness to him as well, I probably didn't go to the appointment with, you know, I now know that I need to come with some really structured, here are my symptoms, here's when they're happening. Like I know a lot more now than other than I just don't feel like myself was probably what I said. So
right.
Fair to him.
Well, you're very generous. You're very generous in your assumption. But yeah.
I think too, would it be safe to say, Dr. Errol, that there are times then where you would see someone who would come in with mild depressive symptoms who didn't have a history, where you would say, okay, let's start with hormone therapy.
Yes, absolutely. If they didn't, and you know, there aren't major life stressors, I would say there is good evidence to show that menopause hormone therapy can be helpful for people without a history who have mild depression or anxiety in perimenopause. Absolutely.
But that's akin as well. I think this is, we were talking about this with Dr. Jennifer Zelovitsky recently, and the fact that, you know, Oprah Winfrey regularly talks about having heart palpitations as a symptom of perimenopause, mm-hmm. which is great in terms of awareness. But Dr. Jen pointed out she had recently diagnosed two women presenting similarly with arrhythmia. So I guess the point being, you really want to make sure you're getting some strong expertise, because you don't want to be dismissing, right, significant depression as perimenopause, similar to heart palpitations as perimenopause, when you've got something serious going on with your heart.
Exactly. We see so much like everyone should be on menopause hormone therapy. Everyone. No, not everyone. And to your point, Mikhail, it's about individualized assessments and cares for your specific symptoms based on your physical health history, based on your mental health history, and based on what you want and based on what you can tolerate, based on what you can afford, etc. Like, we need individualized care, just like at every other stage, just like men get all the time. And now, luckily, we know it's not unsafe for most people to take menopause hormone therapy. So great, we have another thing in our toolkit as healthcare providers. But certainly, we don't want to just brush it off and say, oh, yeah, it's perimenopause. That is such an essential point you make.
Love what you're hearing? Don't miss our weekly newsletter. It's got expert advice, evidence-based resources, practical tips, and of course, a little humor.
Go to thisisperimenopause.com to subscribe and join the thousands of women who have realized they need and deserve better.
Everybody's journey is unique, absolutely. And what works for me does not necessarily work for Michelle. And despite us having similar scenarios, right? Like we really do need an individual approach, different solutions depending on our health history and what we're going through in particular. But when it comes to supporting mental health in perimenopause, in this, you know, the crush of midlife, are there some non-negotiables that everyone needs to participate in?
I think there are several. I think, first of all, so often in midlife, we are pulled in a million directions. And it's important to just stop and pause and think about our own health and take that really seriously. And the same goes for mental health. A lot of women are very either ashamed, they're embarrassed, they're too busy, they don't want to believe it, they brush it off. So that to me is a non-negotiable. And, you know, stopping to think and reflect, like, who am I right now? Also, like, I've been living my life this way. I've had all these responsibilities, all these obligations. How do I want to live the rest of my life? Like, I really encourage people to stop and pause and think about, you know, not only making their life not sick, but making their life really great and good enough and happy and contented. So I think taking the time to pause and think and question, and then do the same about the people in our lives, the relationships in our lives, our careers, and those are, it's hard to make these changes and it's hard to talk about them, but it's so important. So those are all like sort of the psychological interpersonal things that I think everybody should ask themselves. And some of the major factors that I think are non-negotiable for people are to get on top of their sleep. Sleep is so important. Women in midlife and perimenopause need to think about what's happening with my sleep. Why is it so bad? Mm-hmm. And how can I get it better? it's a huge risk factor for becoming depressed, becoming more anxious, becoming enraged really easily. None of us needs more of that. So the sleep, and then obviously the really important things we always talk about as pillars of good health and mental health too are, you know, eating well, not obsessively, but eating enough to keep our muscles and our joints and our bones healthy, being active, being physically active. I say this day in, day out to patients who I see is one of the best prescriptions for depression and anxiety, and so important. It doesn't have to be like you're running around in a weighted vest doing a marathon but it could be, you know, get up, go outside half an hour a day, get out there, walk. If you can do weight bearing exercises that you're going to like and stick to, amazing. Do that too, and do that. That's all so good for our mental health. And then of course we see a lot of women who are drinking more than they should. And now that we have cannabis stores on every corner, you know, people think weed, cannabis products are benign. Unfortunately, they're not at all. They are big, both alcohol and weed and other drugs are significant contributors to depression, anxiety, feeling like shit in general. And it's so underspoken about and shameful. That's a big, big problem as well that I think has to be addressed by people. And we have great therapists at BREEA who can help people with that. And even if they're not ready to quit or make changes, to connect and to start to look at that ever so gently and get ready to make those changes. Because that is so important, because our bodies, our brains react differently to substances when we're going through perimenopause and can be really detrimental to our mental health.
Right.
Can I ask you a quick question?
I know what you're talking about.
Back. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's a day. Back to sleep. So for our listeners, or maybe me, who laying in bed in the anxiety spiral in the middle of the night and can't get back to sleep, do you have any tips on like how to shut that brain down? And I know this isn't, I don't know if this is in your expertise or something.
It's sort of in my, I am not the foremost sleep expert. And, you know, as physicians, we like to stay in our lanes nicely. We have an amazing sleep person called Jess White at BREEA, who is an all around wonderful, incredible person, therapist, sleep expert. So I'm going to, you know, tout her as an expert of all experts. But what I have learned from her and through my years is, yes. So there are some things we can do. First of all, you want to go to bed when you're tired, and you want to be tired enough that Jess uses this analogy of like a big balloon. So in the morning when we're waking up, our balloon needs to be like, you know, when you blow up a balloon and it's tight and it's full, and you want the balloon to sort of get smaller and smaller till it's kind of squishy at the end of the day. And you can put your head on the pillow like a squishy balloon, not like that very buoyant, like hard to balloon, because that's when all the worries and stuff come in. So you want to do things throughout the day to deflate that balloon, whether that's, you know, be active in the day, do things that are going to be relaxing, like yoga nidra throughout the day to relax, limit caffeine, and have a good unwinding bedtime routine, not work out right before bed, not eat a huge meal right before bed, learn to associate your bed with just sleep and sex, and keep so everything that you can do to be as tired as possible and have those associations at bedtime. So your brain's not going to pop up and be, you know, at bedtime.
Perfect.
And then doing things in bed, like mindfulness meditation has good data to help people. It's very, very hard to do. I know it's hard to do. And it's easy for me to just say, do a meditation. But there is good data. The more you practice mindfulness and even relaxation exercises, that can be helpful for people. So there are a lot of different things based on an individual, and you kind of want to look at what you're doing during the day in terms of caffeine and other medications you may be on, and when you're eating, when you're exercising, and rejig some of that stuff in order to get to a point where at bedtime you're ready for sleep and calm and the worries can go away.
Thank you. I'll try that tonight. You know what? I do sleep generally. I do sleep really well, but just recently there's been, you know, we're lots of stuff on my mind and I just, and then the next day, as you said earlier, like I'm just not functioning the same way. Like today I can't remember words. I can't get my words out.
Right.
So, yeah.
Exactly. And it's a big problem. And then you lie there at night thinking, oh no, and tomorrow I have to do this and I have to do that. And then tomorrow night I have to go out to this. And when am I ever going to be able to sleep again? And how am I going to ever function again? And then it becomes catastrophic.
Right. Yes. This is it. Ugh. Ruminating. I ruminate in the middle of the night. Dr. Ariel, I don't know if you're going to have the data on this from Bria's perspective, because I don't know if it's been established long enough, but maybe from your other clinical experience. You're seeing patients through all the stages from trying to conceive, pregnancy, postpartum, perimenopause, and menopause. Is there anything that you have seen over the years, if you've been working with women for that course, are there any flags that come up earlier in their journey that might help them to identify and help them to navigate perimenopause a little bit better?
Absolutely. So the main thing to identify is, and one of the things we always do when patients come and see us, is we take a bit of a hormone and mental health history. So this is where we want to know, are you someone whose brain is sensitive to hormonal changes in terms of mental health symptoms? And what that would look like is we ask, are you someone who, before your period, do you have a worsening of your mental health, depression, anxiety? Are you super sensitive? Are you really angry? Mm-hmm. Okay, how long have you had that? That's point number one of reference. Did you, if you went through fertility, did you find it really tough on your mental health to be taking the medications that you need to prepare your body for the fertility procedures or whatnot that you may have gone through? If you said yes, okay, point number two of data. Did you have problems during pregnancy or the postpartum period? Again, very important information for us, because we know when there is a subset of people who are hormonally sensitive, have hormonally sensitive mediated, that's what we call it, mental health symptoms. So these, in all people who've had these experiences, we know their brains are very sensitive to hormone fluctuations, and that their brains, they're manifest as depression and anxiety. So we know that this person who's had this, when we look through their life cycle and their reproductive stages that they've gone through, is likely going to struggle during perimenopause. Because, of course, as we know, the characteristic hormonal transitions of perimenopause, it's not a smooth, gentle line. It's like a very jagged sawtooth decline that we're experiencing, and up and down, and every hour is changing. So that person is also going to be very sensitive throughout the menopause transition. And so people then, if they know this about themselves, the first thing we tell people is track your cycles, track your cycles and your mental health symptoms against your cycles as much as you possibly can, because that gives your healthcare providers so much data. There's a lot of ways we can help people be successful and not suffer as much in perimenopause if we have this data about their background.
Do you know, I wish I could turn back time and go back 15 years and do this all over again, because they are so much wiser, these 20, 30 something year olds. They know to track. They know so much more. And so then I could be going to you to talk about this stuff, and you could prepare me and say, hey, by the way, in the next 5 to 10 years, you might start noticing some of this stuff. And maybe this is what, like,
exactly.
Oh my gosh. I love this. I need a time machine.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we love now is people are coming to us. Like people are coming to us at shows or at talks. They're showing up and they're in their 20s and 30s. And at first we're like, oh, hi, you know, are you here for your mom? Are you? They're like, no, I want to get informed. I hear this is going to be happening. And so now we just expect that when we're giving talks and at shows or,
that's, you know, so good.
Wonderful. Like the earlier, the better. I just really am so determined that people do not suffer in silence on their own. I'm determined that people have the words to take to their own healthcare providers to ask for good evidence-based care and to take their own health and their own health concerns really, really seriously and to feel better because we have so much of our lives still left to live. With respect to mental health in particular, I would say to people, don't be afraid to speak up about it. I think people are getting a little more comfortable speaking up, but I still see far too many people who come and see me and they said, I've been dealing with this for over a year now. And, you know, I've had to take time off work. I can't function well. My relationship is so rocky. I'm thinking about leaving. I can't be the person I want to be for my kids or my friends. So that is so totally unacceptable. And I know it's hard to speak up and I know it's hard to talk to healthcare providers if you have one. I know it's often hard for people to even find a good healthcare provider, but my wish is that you don't feel stigmatized or self-stigmatize before you even get out your door and that you talk and talk to your friends and talk online. There are great resources. They're also bad ones, but they're also good ones. So you feel less alone and know where to go and know how to navigate.
Why do you think that it's just that women don't have the language for it? We're not used to asking for it. Why do so many people suffer for so long before they raise their hand?
I think when it comes to anything related to women and women's health, there's stigma. And I think with mental health, there's also stigma. So it's that double stigma of women feel like they should be perfect. They should have it all together. They can't speak up. And then when you add in brain health problems like menopause that feels shameful, like depression, anxiety, anger feels so shameful for people that all of that together leads to self-silencing and a lot of issues for people.
Well, luckily we've got not only the team at Bria, but also now menopause mental health certified. Is that what it is? Menopause mental health certified practitioners. How do they find these practitioners? Are they designated? Are you keeping a log like the National Menopause Society does?
We publish lists with each of our cohorts that graduate. So if people follow us on Instagram, our Instagram handle is @bria.health, @BRIA.health on Instagram. They can follow us on LinkedIn. They can follow me. They can follow Bria. They can follow my partner, Bev Young. We're all on LinkedIn as well. And we publish names of these providers who come through our training and get our certification on their own LinkedIn profiles. A lot of these providers have that. So when people are looking or they post on their Instagram handles. So we're trying to get the word out there.
Yeah, well, we will definitely be helping you. We'll have to do a post about that. This is great.
Thank you.
And very needed. Thank you.
Thank you both.
Ariel, that was fantastic. I know that this is such an important topic for everyone, but also specifically women in perimenopause. It's something that a lot of women are struggling with. So this has been really wonderful to have such an important and honest conversation with you. Thank you for all that you're doing. And we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you both. It's great to chat. I feel like we were just out for coffee chatting. So thank you.
That's what this is all about.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and write a review,
so more women can find us and get a better understanding of what to expect in perimenopause.
This information is not intended as medical advice. The intent of this information is to provide the listener with knowledge to support more efficient and effective communication with their medical provider.